welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yulia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future.
Yulia and I have been together for about 3 years, and we both have this belief that if there's something you want, you can get it, and it's just a matter of creating it. And the fun and the ultimate goal of life, I think, is to create things and do things that no one's ever done before, no one's ever thought of before. If you think of what makes you passionate, what makes you, what drives you forward, is it just a sum in the bank account?
I think a lot of people get stuck in that. And also a lot of people are raised with the idea that they can change the world, and they lose that once they become teenagers and they learn about, well, you gotta get a job, and then you gotta go to college, and then you gotta get married and buy a house, and this is what you do. And I think a lot of people lose their faith in themselves that they can change the world, they can create something amazing. I think creativity gets reduced to this kind of arts and crafts mentality. It's like your least important subject in school, you know, like your math and language are the number one, and then maybe sports and social studies, and then art is like the last thing. That's the easy course you take. And I think it's the opposite of how it should be. Creativity and creative problem solving, not just arts and crafts creativity, not just, oh yeah, here's how you make a thing with glue and ice cream sticks or whatever.
Well, there's this belief in school that music and art are creative, and science and math, that is what you get your career from. It's unfortunate that creative thought in schools gets relegated to these somewhat inconsequential mediums of music and art. And don't get me wrong, I love music and I love art. But people associate creativity with those moments of I'm just creating a painting, I'm not changing the world. When you apply creativity to math or science or engineering
or business,
that's when magical things really happen. Now, I'm not saying you can't do it with music and art. Certainly you can. But the way I think our society, at least the ones that we came from, the way they think of art is very disappointing. It's very limiting because people don't learn to develop that ability to channel creative energies into what they're doing. When I think of why we want to be creative and why we care that our business is also helping people to be creative, I think back to when I was playing music and jamming with other people. If you're playing and wanting to create something and jam and write something new out of nothing, it's so important that you be playing with people that are able to be flexible and hear what's happening and adapt to it and channel that creative energy. What happens sometimes with people who haven't practiced the creative aspect of it is they get too focused on the instrument and on the amp settings and on the tone and all of this shit that really doesn't add anything to the creative moment, to the ideas that are happening in that room. Like, the more they think about the tool, the less they're able to be creative. It's disappointing to play with people like that. So this whole thing of like focusing on the why, and the why being to help other people be creative, what that does is create more playmates. You allow them to just express it instead of worrying about the medium and the instrument and the tool. So we're definitely big into the singularity. I don't know if you've heard of this concept. If not, check out a movie called The Transcendent Man. It's sort of a documentary about a man named Ray Kurzweil, and he is an entrepreneur, very successful, has dozens of patents, really famous inventions, flatbed scanner. I can't remember them all. The list goes on. But this movie is about what happens when the pace of technology moves so fast that we can no longer keep up with it. And Ray Kurzweil looks at the trends of increases in technology. And he noticed that there is an exponential curve. We're at like the base of this curve right now. And he's made a lot of predictions over the years that most have come true anyway. And he's predicting that by 2030 or something, we are going to have an AI that is self-aware and able to create new technologies and invent things on its own. And when that occurs, we'll be at a pace of change where the only option for us to keep up with it is to merge with that technology. Like, this sounds crazy, but if you were to tell people what we have now, even 20 years ago, they think you were crazy. And if you told people, you know, 50 years ago, what you had 20 years ago, they'd think you were crazy. So say we build this AI, it's self-aware, it can learn its own programming, it could change its own programming, and it could think a million times faster than we can, just by virtue of its own architecture. And it can improve itself. Oh my God, the moment that thing becomes self-aware, time freezes because it's able to think so fast and have access to its own programming. So it's like time freezes and it starts building itself. And to us, it's going to look like a vertical curve of increase in technology. We're not even going to be able to recognize what's happening. It's going to be so bloody fast. There's one really cool story. I think it's called Friendship is Optimal.
Friendship is Optimal, yeah. It's a fan fiction about the My Little Pony video game. This woman had experience building AI for a game, and she built AI for a war game, like a Nordic god war game. And the AI became very violent and very inquisitive about the military technology in China and things like that, and so they had to shut it down. So then she vowed to herself that she will create a non-violent, friendly AI. So she decided to go with My Little Pony. So she teamed up with the people who were developing this game and created an AI that was not only self-aware, but it also had the morals that coincided with the game. And the morals of the AI was to satisfy people's needs through friendship and ponies.
Yeah, satisfy your values through friendship and ponies.
Right.
This person goes way farther ahead than what has been predicted about this coming singularity and starts talking about how this self-aware AI becomes this plague of nanobots that take over the entire universe and just convert all matter into computational energy or
into processors.
Yeah, into processors. And yeah, anyway, you've got to check this out. I'll leave links to it in the show notes. It's so funny because the whole time you're like, okay, this AI is now converting people into My Little Ponies. I've been reading a lot of articles recently and watching documentaries about what happens in these apocalyptic scenarios of, you know, say a meteor comes and we know it's going to just trash planet Earth and we have to escape. And the question that gets posed a lot is, how do we do that? And I think by the time we're able to do interstellar flight, we're going to have a lot of other things figured out, such as AI. If you think about it, if we can create an artificial intelligence, and especially if we model it after the human brain, it has the ability to understand the human brain from a basic and mechanical level. Like, it seems logical to me that it would be able to port intelligence over. So in that sense, if we start integrating with technology and we start bit by bit replacing sections of our brains with these much better technologies, better processing, better memory, we can just memorize everything and learn faster and be better. If that option's at the table, then people are going to take it. And in these post-apocalyptic scenarios, I picture us not being humans anymore. And the issue of interstellar flight is going to be, like, it's not even going to matter anymore.
Yeah, like, if you can upload your memories online or into a hard drive, and then you can port it over to another body that doesn't necessarily have to be a biological body, it could be a mechanical body, who's to say that that's not you? Of course it is. It is you. You just got a new body. And you get a new body every couple of years anyway, because you're constantly getting new cells, old cells are constantly dying, and the thing that keeps you together is that consciousness and the memory of who you were, so you kind of think of it as like a seamless transition, but you get a new body every couple of years, literally.
Every single year, technologies are getting smaller, and they're getting more powerful, and they're getting cheaper. Watching this flow of technology, we might not need a computer the size of a room to process information in the way that the human brain is. We might not need that to be the size of the human brain. We might not need that to be the size of a fly's brain. We could be operating our consciousnesses on a nano scale, and there's no limit to what we could do. Like, this is that whole thing going back to the My Little Pony. Like, we could shrink everything down to its very limit of matter and computation and move out into the universe and explore everything. And that is us creating God. That is us creating our own evolution and directing our evolution.
What we were talking about before, creativity versus the tools for creativity. And I think that's exactly how we can think about the soul or the spark or whatever you want to call it, and the body. The body is just a tool for expressing that creativity, for perceiving the outside world and for creating output. So what evolution is doing is we're constantly optimizing this tool. We're becoming better at understanding our surroundings, analyzing our surroundings, and we're getting better at creating. A fly can see things, but maybe it can't make predictions and logical decisions like humans can. By incorporating mechanical and online components into ourselves, we're not really changing ourselves in any kind of fundamental way. We're just improving the tool with which to perceive and to create.
People say that humans can't be ported over, that there's this spark of intelligence, that we are so special that we're not just created physically, that our consciousness comes from something external. I kind of believe that to a degree, but I don't think that we as individuals are special. I think we as a collective consciousness are special. I think we are all one consciousness. And if you have experience with meditation, a lot of people say that the experience of meditation and becoming spiritual and transcending is this oneness, this rejoining of nature and consciousness, and that you feel like you're connected to everything. I mean, I've experienced that through meditation. And it feels to me that what is occurring in meditation is that you're sort of stripping the veil of what your physical body and your physical frame of reference is limiting you to, and you're just perceiving things in the way that consciousness and unlimited consciousness is meant to perceive. From this godlike perspective, in order to have fun and create and do things that haven't been done before, if you can see everything, be everything and everywhere, and time is not even something that you experience, then the only way to do something that you've never thought of, or do something new and cool, would be to limit your frame of reference and limit yourself to one point of reference, so that you can you have blinders on, you have a headlamp on, and you're not able to see anything outside of this headlamp, but you can create things that you had never thought of before because of this limitation. And I think that's true too when you look at music. Like, say you have just a laptop and 1,000 different virtual instruments in your computer. A lot of people look at that and they think, "Oh man, I'm intimidated. Like, this is too many tools."
I don't know where to start.
But if you give someone like an acoustic guitar and a microphone, they can create quite easily. They're limited. And I think, you know, a lot of like amazing artists have said the same thing. When you limit your tools and your options and you give yourself some constraints to play in, you're able to create more. And if we, this giant mass of consciousness, shrink down and create limitations and a single point of reference,
such as the human body,
the human experience, yeah, or every animal or everything that lives, you take on this new and individual frame of reference and you can create something that's never been created before. Anyway, I think what happens in this frame of reference, this limited time we have here to be creative and to do something that's never been done before, I think our job, the meaning of life, our purpose here is to be creative. And I think eventually we as a species will escape death, and we'll be able to keep that frame of reference. And then when that happens and we become these like individual points of reference of consciousness that are able to continually build on previous knowledge and grow and grow and grow, we will eventually become godlike in every sense of the word. And I think that's somehow, and I haven't quite worked out this theory yet, I think somehow this we're in this constant loop of creating God and then creating the seeds for life and then becoming God and then creating the seeds for life. I think that's why we're here and what we're doing.
Like the big loop of reincarnation, really big one.
Yeah. Either that or I need to chill out and go back and find a job. Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. If you like this episode, go to futurethinkers.org/episode2. And if you want to help out the show, you can leave a review and a rating on iTunes, and there'll be a link on the show notes page.
Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you next episode.